I fell into a ring of fire. I fell in.
Let's see it.
When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight. Fever.
Oh, I wish I was in Wellington. The wind is kind of...
Welcome to Fever FM. We're here to talk about the final game of the season, or the regular season, sorry. Obviously, we've got finals to deal with. I'm joined by Dale, Helena, and Dave. Hello, all.
Evening.
Hello.
Hello.
How does it feel for the Knicks to get their highest ever finish, regardless of the Mariners game coming up? Helena, you've got this. You're away with the fairies, aren't you?
No.
Okay. How's it feeling for you up in Auckland?
I was trying to explain to someone on whatever day the game was what a strange thing it is to think we might be disappointed with finishing second in the the scheme of being a Phoenix fan. It feels, if you'd said this to me a year ago, even that you might be disappointed with second place in the league, it would have been kind of hysterical laughter back in your face territory.
You are really taking the cam roll at the moment. Just that wild. Realize that the heights we've achieved.
Well, I mean, I do feel that way, because for me, and I am conscious that this is slightly different to other people on this podcast or who listen to it. My time as a Phoenix fan started when I was 7 or 8 years old, and I learned at that age that it is the hope that kills you, and that it was an endlessly depressing experience for my entire childhood. And it is bizarre to me that in this season, on the precipice of an Auckland team returning, which is something that for my childhood was like a don't do that, it's cursed, the Phoenix have this insane season when they've been written off and they've got a coach who has a law degree. And if this was America, they'd be making a Netflix documentary. And I just can't quite get my head around it.
Dave, you had hope once upon a time before the dark times.
I agree with what Helena's saying. I think it's weird. You give me second place at the start of the season, I'd take it. I'd take it for sure. That would be fantastic. I wouldn't even have to think about it. I would take second. But instead, here we are feeling a little bit like maybe we're going to miss out on something. And that's, yeah, a pretty surreal feeling. But at the same time, as you say, you know, I've had the hope beaten out of me long ago. I went in to Saturday knowing full well it wasn't going to be a Phoenix win and a Mariners loss. Like, I knew that deep in my heart. But as I kept saying to people, I'm like, but the second Newcastle are up 1-0 and we're up 1-0, that's all going out the window. From that point on, I'm living and dying on every kick. But I went in certain in the fact it wasn't going to happen. And it didn't happen. You know, there wasn't that moment where we were seeing Newcastle up and us up and thinking, shit, maybe this is going to happen. So I still assume tomorrow is going to go the bad place, but I'm also like, maybe not, maybe, you know, maybe we will pull this out of the hat, but at least it's out of our hands now. You know, we've had a fantastic season and done everything we could have realistically to succeed. And yeah, I think we'll look back on the season, no matter what happens from here on out, and go, that was a hell of a season.
Yeah. I think likewise, it's crazy that we've in the last game of the season and still within a chance. Like, if we were, you know, 5 or 6 points behind, you'd be like, that's, yeah, it's done pretty well. But to be this close, but still feeling quite far away at the same time, is kind of a very weird experience. And, you know, like, another year's 53 points would have got us the title. I think in 3 of the last 4 years, it would have given us the title. And it makes you really look at some of the close parts of the season. Like, if we hadn't conceded that last goal to Central Coast, we would have won by now. We would have had the title. And, you know, you can talk about Rufus miss or whatever, but that one goal in that one game in the last 2 minutes is how this season is probably going to play out, well, at least the regular season. So, yeah, it's kind of, I guess it's in some ways kind of highlights, you know, how close the season has been and how we've kind of gone toe for toe with Central Coast for almost the entire season.
you know, like a massively depleted squad that was primarily academy graduates, and, you know, Zavada barely played. It's actually crazy when you really stop and think about it. It's unbelievable that it's going to come down to such fine margins.
You were talking about the Netflix doco. I'm thinking it's a Disney movie, to be quite honest. I mean, we had our top goal scorer basically go out and stay out for the whole season. We had our hometown kid, Costa, who has never really fired for the Knicks, just decide, nah, this is my season, and just start banging them in. It just, and all these young players that have come through have basically, to a man, stepped up, which I think is, yeah, it's Disney movie. It's not doco yet. We should probably even talk about this game. It was, there's a few things I want to get to, because I think that this was quite the game anyway, and many, many moments. Before even the game started, the march to the match, I mean, let's be honest, amongst the Yellow Fever Towers at the beginning of the season, there wasn't great hope, and there was a lot of pessimism. And yet there was some very happy campers, Dale, who were very fired up and went for a big march to almost celebrate this achievement of getting this far. How did it feel just doing something like that, something big before the game?
We really only organised it like 3 days before, really. There'd kind of been some talk about doing a march for the playoff game, and I think at some point we were just like, stuff it, let's try it for this game. And it's you know, we've been around for 16 years, and I don't think we've ever done one before, or at least we've tried it once. Maybe we've tried it once and it didn't quite work, or whatever, but I was just quite surprised about how many people participated. Lots of people kind of left the bar maybe like 10 minutes before we was due to leave, and I was like, oh, maybe people go in the game early, big crowd, etc. But they all seemed to hang outside and wait for it, and it was quite the spectacle. I'm looking forward to doing it again in a couple of weeks' time for whatever opponent we have on the 18th. It's nice to see some people I hadn't seen, you know, for a few years as well. People who have kind of drifted in and out for various reasons, you know, family commitments and whatnot, and seeing some of those people who were there for the first few seasons in and around the club again, and hopefully we can attach, you know, get those people back for next season in a more consistent fashion.
One return that we did see was in the starting lineup. Pod favourite Nico Pennington returning to the lineup ahead of the horizontal Houston Salas. Before halfway through the season, if you had said I was going to be happy about Nico Pennington backing in the starting lineup, I think you might have got a hard no from me. But I was relatively happy after Salas's not so stellar form of late. How did you all feel about that and the rest of the lineup?
I think similarly, I think, you know, Rufus the nailed on starter in that midfield, and I think perhaps what we're seeing on different parts of the time is just a little bit of consistency among the other players. Like Pennington has his hot and cold moments. Salas has certainly had shown the same. Alte maybe is a bit more consistent, but just at a lower level. So I guess it's just a matter of trying to predict which one is going to have their hot moments, because I thought Pennington was really good in that game after a couple of weeks before that not having the best outings, so certainly justified his selection, I thought.
Helena, how did you feel about fronting to MacArthur? This was I felt that of all those top four teams, MacArthur we seem to just have the wood on. Is that just a horses for courses, or just...
Like, I think it might be a little bit to do with the way the teams match up, particularly in the midfield. We have kind of an enforcery ability to break up play midfield that is able to deal with their kind of incredible ball distributors. And I think you notice that when kind of our midfield fell off a bit at the start of the first half and MacArthur just started running it a little bit. Kind of see, you saw that mismatch. But otherwise, I don't really know. It was a strange game. It both felt inevitable that we'd win it, and it did feel stressful at times, and they seemed better than us at times, and we seemed better than them at times. But well taken goals, I guess.
Do you think that this is having good knowledge of their two main playmakers, Davila and Lewis? Just that inside knowledge that gives us a bit of the wood on them.
I mean, I think that's probably a factor. It certainly never hurts to know a couple of their key players really well, which, you know, you've got a coaching staff who knows them well, but also players who know them well as well. You know, they would have trained against each other and opposed things, you know, more often than most. So I think it's one of those ones where I think that might be the case. But I also think maybe tactically, Chiefy just has the wood over this team. But much as they're, as you say, you know, a team that it does feel like we match up very well against and probably should win, there's enough kind of stories there for them to be the one who stops us winning the Premier's plate, right? Like, you know, a last-minute Davila winner or Clayton with a free kick to stop us winning the plate wouldn't have felt out of place at all. You know, I'm glad the game, I would say we dominated enough that that wasn't the case, but there were still a few moments there, you know, before we'd put those two goals in, where you did see them playing some good football and looking like maybe they could get their noses in front and see what happens. So yeah, I wouldn't say I looked at MacArthur and thought this isn't a team that worries me. But yeah, obviously we put out a pretty dominant performance.
Mm. Well, I must say I did feel like that. I mean, the team that worries me the most out of that, like, I know that Mariners, we match up almost identically to them, and it's just going to be this battle of attrition. Victory, I'm not less concerned about, but they are quite mercurial. MacArthur, I've never felt bad about, but Sydney worries me. Just their ability to press, I think, is a hard matchup for us. Dave, you mentioned Chiefy and his coaching, and I really want to get into this because those first two goals felt like just training ground moves that Chiefy had worked out and knew that that was just going to be the winner. That first one by Pennington, I was almost on top of. I was sitting away from the fever zone with the kids. And you saw Pennington. There's no way he could have seen that Costa was making that run. There were a couple of players in front of him, but he just knew. He just put that ball through and Costa was already going. Does it feel like Chiefy just had that worked out, like that he has his set plays? And I would love to know your feeling on this sort of thing, because it seems quite remarkable to me that he's still coming up with these set plays that no one's seen, or these training ground moves that people haven't seen. And we're in the last game of the regular season.
I mean, yeah, maybe these are set plays, maybe not. I think just the way he coaches and the kind of style of what he teaches his players to do brings about this sort of stuff. You know, he does, even when you look about when we're playing out from the back, for example, he wants his defenders incredibly comfortable getting their head up and playing one-touch football. And I think when you must spend hours and hours doing that kind of stuff at training, you do just get better at seeing the space and knowing where the person's going to make the run and all of that just on instinct. You don't need to necessarily work it as a single set play that you're going to pull out. So I do wonder if there's an element of that. But I mean, the second goal, it's not the one you mentioned, but I watched that and thought, shit, they're a bit unlucky that goal of the season's essentially already been voted for, because that's right up there. That is just a quality team goal. And you score that earlier in the season and it's a shout for a bunch of awards. Instead, you do it kind of after everything's done and dusted, and still a great goal, but not a contender for those sorts of things anymore.
Yeah, a couple of things. I'll start with the second one. I think the second one is one that is applied to MacArthur in particular. They defend very centrally. Their fullback, I can't remember who made the central run. It might have been maybe Costa, and their left back tracked with them along with their two centre backs, so that Costa's been bucked three players and they hang out to the back post. And they did it a couple of times, I think, in the second half as well, to a similar effect. So I think that one's definitely devised for MacArthur. I think the first one is we've seen that run and that ball quite a few times this season. I can think of the Sydney goal was exactly the same, a ball from a right back. I think it was Salas that time up in Auckland. Costa gets in behind, cuts inside. I feel like he's had it a couple other times as well. So I think that one's certainly a much more of a a consistent, you know, pattern of play is, you know, Costa being on the shoulder and us looking for those sort of curling balls that kind of go in towards goal to try to take out defenders. So that one seems a far more common occurrence than the second one.
H, that parallel inside run, that's got to be the sort of thing that you must tickle the heartstrings for you, surely.
Yeah, I just come back to, I think Dave's point really is the one, I think the system he has implemented just lets them kind of, they look like they're playing pretty free football. They're making those runs, which are a tactician's dream, but it's not stilted. It is probably a response to MacArthur's system, but it still looks instinctual. They still do it. They can do, turn it on a dime. It's just like, I don't know if I ever imagined that I'd see the Phoenix playing football like that, you know, cutting a team to ribbons, but also being able to do it every week.
But doing it with that second goal with two fullbacks, Sutt sets it off, inside runner, and then the back post run by Payne. I mean, that's...
The inside run is one of the, you know, what I love about how Chiefy coaches and his tactics is his use of the channels. Like, so much of the Phoenix system is actually about those channels. Whether it's Altay and Nico Pennington dropping into the channel to get the fullback gone, whether it's Costa or David Ball dropping into the front channel so that Krajev can get behind, that use of that space that is so hard to defend, is so tactically sophisticated and so nice to watch, and has got the best out of players who probably previously hadn't had the best gotten out of them, like Pennington. It's just really nice. I just like seeing a good tactician at work.
I can't remember what I was going to say now, so we can move on.
Sorry, mate. We interrupted you.
Helena dribbled on, so I went out of my head.
I was hoping you're going to be up there in support with her, mate. You might have got a free tap in.
Men always trying to silence women.
Yeah.
I actually remember what it is now. I think the first goal is the for some reason it catches people off guard, and I think it's because, you know, we do play this ball along the back line quite a bit, and I think teams just get a bit, I don't know, casual with it, and then suddenly at some point we turn the switch and try and move the ball with a bit more pace, and that's where we start to cut teams open. I think defences just get a bit lazy when we're kind of knocking, you know, 10 or 15 passes along the back line, and then suddenly it goes from your right fullback over the top and they haven't really clicked. And particularly if you're MacArthur, you've got some pretty aging and pretty average centre backs that can't go with you. It's, yeah, not the worst tactic going around.
But it was one of the things that I really appreciated was the number of times Costa made that inside channel run to take Uzcock with him. And watching Uzcock turn like an absolute oil tanker. It was, I hate that man with such a passion. But just watching Costa go past him like he just wasn't there, it was, I didn't even mind if Costa didn't get the ball. We did see a couple of opportunities kind of falling just before that. The unstructured ones, I'm going to call it, Costa picking up and hitting on the turn. The Bawley one, which was the offside. In hindsight, watching the highlights, I was kind of struck by this. We don't score those scruffy goals, or we certainly haven't this season. We've scored mainly a lot of pass structured goals, quick break, sure, but nothing of the like the ball's been dropped in the 6-yard box or, you know, someone just hits on the turn and scuffs it into the corner, you know, inside post or something. Is that something you guys have kind of...
It's interesting to say that because I was the Phoenix sent around there kind of email to members to vote for the goal of the year. And I went and looked at them, and I think it's probably not all of them, but a pretty good chunk. And there's no real bangers out there. Like, there's no, like, you know, 30-yard top draw about Thunder Bastards. They're all kind of quite intricate passing, but not many that like really stand out. They're all very kind of similar, you know, nothing really stands out significantly as opposed to perhaps other clubs. And I think that, you know, goes to the kind of us trying to create the best possible chances so they don't look like fantastic goals, even though the build-up is what makes it them good goals. But the old one that he, you know, spanks it from inside the box is you know, well hit, but it's by no means, you know, a 30-yard cracker that some of the other teams have nominated as their goals of the season.
Yeah, I think I agree. I was going to say very similar, and I think I would almost frame it maybe as more of a criticism, because I think we scored a lot of kind of above average goals, which is great, and that's fantastic to see that we're building those up. But I think, and you look at some of the really tight results we've had this season, and some of those games that we're on a knife edge, we haven't really scored those scrappy ones. You know, we haven't had those kind of poachers milling around in the box just ready to tap in a mistake, right? And the fact we haven't either tells you no one in defense or in goal on the other teams made mistakes, or we weren't there to capitalize when they did. Now, I don't want to criticize the way we're setting up, because obviously it's working, but I do think it is probably the one thing missing from our game, maybe, is that we haven't capitalized on those little mistakes that could have turned, you know, your one all draws into two ones, or put some games beyond doubt. Because I think we could easily go back through highlight reels and see some scrappy situations that we probably should have just put away, and games would have been, you know, knocked on the head, dead, buried, done. The fact that we've still come out of the season the way we have is fantastic, but it might have been the turning point to having this season done and dusted earlier, as if we also were capitalizing on some of those scrappy mistakes. Now, trying to do what he is doing with the beautiful flowing football and also poaching scraps is not necessarily easy, but it does suggest to me that, you know, there are opportunities where maybe we should have been following it on keepers and that kind of stuff that just weren't there. And that would be my criticism of it.
Yeah, I mean, that probably points to, you know, missing a Zawada, basically, the sort of guy that will capitalize on those little tap-ins and cheap goals, should we call them.
I mean, Costa's been that guy at parts of his career too, right?
But the amount of running he's been doing and running from deep on the counter, it's kind of, you do wonder whether that's, he's just not in a position to do that. Whereas, you know, someone running, clearly playing off the shoulder, is probably going to be the person that gets to that more often than not. I mean, I still come back to, you know, we've effectively lost 10, 12 goals by Zawada being injured, you know, potentially. It's, he went, what did he get last year, 16? And he's barely played,
15, I think.
Yeah, and he's barely played, what, 6, 7 games?
Yeah, but then, you know, Costa wouldn't have probably scored as many goals as he did.
No.
Yeah.
No, and we've discussed how would we have even been as good playing with Zawada, which is kind of almost the question. But he's now kind of coming back into contention, and maybe those scrappy goals are a way in, as much as he made it may not contribute as much to some of the gloriously intricate ones. I wouldn't mind getting onto the way we're using the fullbacks at the moment, just because we've seen such a shift over the season, going from this very lopsided attack playing right hand forward with Payne coming on in a very static left hand side with Kelly Heald. Do you think that was kind of was only because Sutz was injured at the beginning of the season, or is this just been Chiefy recognizing that Sutz is on fire and just going, hell, we can use both of them?
Kelly Heald and Sutz are quite different fullbacks. Yeah, I think you can certainly notice the difference on the ground. I think, you know, Sutton gets us a bit more sort of dribbling impetus going forward. I think he's much better on delivery and crosses and balls into the final third than Kelly Heald is.
And his dribbling is astounding for a fullback.
But maybe I underestimated, or whether it's just got better this season, but it's certainly noticeable how he, for a few times there, not in this game, but previous games, he got out of very tight situations when he had two or three markers on him and just skinned them all and was away. Yeah, I think we probably give up something somewhat defensively as opposed to Kelly Heald, but I don't think it's too much, I think. But it certainly does, as the second goal showed, gives us a much sort of outlets over, you know, both flanks with Sutton and Payne up there.
What do you reckon, Dave?
I completely agree. I think, yeah, Dale's covered everything. I have nothing to add for once.
Helena, should I even ask you about people that stand that far back in the field normally?
Excuse you. I was a fullback for an entire season. And I hated
you injured?
Oh! At Forest Hill Milford, I was temporarily converted into a wingback and I complained about it incessantly.
Yeah.
But it did allow me to make my use. So thanks, Ben Bate, if you're listening. Nah, Dave's covered it. Wouldn't want to dribble on, eh? Dale's covered it. Wouldn't want to... All men are the same to me.
I mean, three white men, we do look alike.
Jeez, mate, you got at least 10 years on us, Frosty.
I've probably got 20 on you, Dubs.
It definitely looks like 20, mate.
Yeah. Give it a couple of years, those two kids will catch up. Dale's so pretty quick. He's not wrong. I'm just feeling it after playing a full 90 on the weekend. Yeah, you don't do that.
You're doing better than me. I can't play football anymore and I'm 24.
I know. I think even Cam retired later than that. So
yeah, that's grim. So, you know, yeah. Everyone out there, you're still playing Sunday League. You're better than me.
You just got to pick up a camera. Join Cam. With the rest of the game, I think once those two goals went in, I think this game was done and dusted. Is that how you all felt? Certainly the crowd got a bit quieter, shall we say, or got a little more distracted by the Newcastle game that was going on. I take it that was quite the thing in the Fever Zone. It certainly seemed like there was a bit more yelling and that going on that wasn't focused on the game in front of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at 2-0, right, this game felt like 3 points for us. So it was the other side of the equation that mattered at that point. And so, yeah, there were obviously a fair few screens in the Fever Zone watching the other game and riding every corner for the Jets and all of that. And, yeah, I had a few beers, so I don't know exactly which minute it was in. But once they kind of piled on another goal and then another one followed pretty quickly after that, it was, you know, a bit of a mood killer for what was, as you say, if we were watching just the game in front of us, an incredibly dominant performance and an absolute trouncing of a top six team.
I didn't quite grasp the how late those goals were. I think they were 82nd and 86th minute for Newcastle. I think I said to, I can't remember who it was, for might have been Patrick or someone, that I thought our best route to winning the title was for two draws. For Central Coast, I can't see them losing one of the games. So for them to eke a couple of goals at the end of the game's a bit frustrating. But like you said, Dave, I thought we were entirely comfortable for that whole game, and the fact we were 2-0 up and we didn't sort of sit on one, which was nice, gave us a lot of gave me a lot of comfort, particularly because, I mean, they barely mustered a shot on target. Davila didn't even realise he was on the park. Playing Lewis, pretty invisible. Jermaine, again, just absolutely nothing for a team that scored so many goals. We just very workmanlike put them away.
Hmm. Yeah, they managed a grand total of two shots on target the entire game. Hit as many shots as us, but managed to ping a lot of them over and wide and probably a fair few blocks, if judging by the way Sermon seems to rack them up. We did see a few subs coming on a bit later, with a bit of impact actually. Cryve, he's had a good end to this season. Getting a well deserved rest, bringing OVH's fresh legs on. We saw Salas coming on and Ball going off. This is my only moment of consternation, is that as much as Salas's work rate is as high as David Ball's, his propensity to get very, very horizontal, especially if he's made a bad touch just before it, did concern me slightly, but he managed to sort that out. And Pennington getting well-deserved rest for Oscar Zavada. How many more minutes does Zavada need to really start being able to have, I guess, the blood going through the legs to contribute when we get into semifinals? It seems like he hasn't had a whole lot. Like, there was only less than 10 minutes this game. Same with the last one. Is this just we need to manage his minutes? We didn't think he was going to be back in time, or is it just he's not part of Plan A at all?
I honestly think it's both. I think he's not part of Plan A, but I also think they're probably managing his minutes quite tightly. I think he's come back from an injury they expected to be a bit longer early. That's great. It's nice to have. But given you don't need the minutes out of him either, why risk playing him for 30 and balking him again when actually 10 minutes as an impact player in a game that's already dead is perfectly fine. You know, it gets him ticking over. It keeps him there and an option if you need him come finals football. But no point risking him in this sort of game, right? I just don't see why you would.
Should we go to the specialist rehabber?
That is insensitive, what I have can't be rehabbed. Yeah, hard balance, right? Because those kind of things with like a corked thigh that centers with growth, it's a real hard thing to manage in terms of blood flow. You don't, like, you've got to sit in a quite a hard middle ground. But I agree, I don't think he's in Plan A, because ultimately the way their playing system has evolved in his absence is working for them. But as you say, you never, his ability to come on and just make things happen is obviously useful. But I also wouldn't underestimate the effect of 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there. But it will be interesting to see the role he plays going forward, because he kind of obviously still backs himself, which I rate. Ask for the penalty.
I wonder if he'll turn out for the Central League side this weekend to get some more minutes in his legs.
Can you imagine pulling up to play the academy and Oscar Zavadas? I'd go home.
He'd bully those poor children. That's not okay. He'd beat them up.
And that's the Slidely tradition.
Well, yes. So, Dale, you kind of haven't answered that Plan A thing question.
Oh, yeah, likewise. Clearly he's not fit enough to play more than 45 minutes, so therefore he's by default an impact player, and I think that probably suits where we're at the moment anyway. I think, you know, if we were to go into a game and have Yassin Zawada coming on with 20 minutes to go, I think you'd be a bit freaked out if you were the opposition compared to, you know, Oscar Van Hattem coming on or something like that. It's, yeah, there's a big difference in quality between them, so I think it does give us another avenue to go if we're needing it.
You all have mentioned the Zawada being a bit of a super sub, and we saw it obviously in full effect here. He's managed to get in front of Curto to the ball, and Curto's touched him. I think to Zawada's credit, he didn't just throw himself on the ground. He actually stumbled and went down, which I thought for a striker is very refreshing. Maybe he's just a little match fitness isn't there, and he didn't even think about it. He's so worried about the ball. And I can't remember who I should be giving credit to for this, but I believe they're right about not letting Curto get to reader's notes by not showing you who's going to take the penalty. I noticed that Roofs, Costa and Zawada all stood around over the ball, all not talking to each other, obviously having made a decision on who's taking it, but no one telling anyone until the ref actually made them pick and made Curto go back to his line. Was that you, Dale, or was that...
That was me. It was actually, I think Costa was interviewed midweek about the Roofer one, and they said, it basically said it's deliberate to try to take the focus of, you know, defenders standing around the spot and stuff and letting the actual penalty taker have a collective moment away from the situation and then just giving him the ball at the end. So there's certainly a tactic about it. But yeah, nice penalty to round it off. I mean, it's much nicer to have a penalty in the 95th minute when you're 2-0 up and nothing matters really, does it?
Dave, what do you reckon the reason was for giving Zawada the ball for this one?
Oh, I think he just wanted it. I think it's that simple. I think he could do with a bit of confidence, and he's clearly a reasonably good penalty taker. I only saw the penalty for the first time today because obviously I don't watch them at the game. But it was a well-taken pen. He finishes it nicely, and I think that'll do a bit of confidence. You know, coming on with less than 10 minutes in the game and banging in a goal for a guy who definitely is a, let's say, confident striker rather than ego-driven striker. But you know, like a goal's going to do his ego some good.
His goal per minute must be pretty decent this season. You know, he had the hat trick against the Roar. He had that goal not long after coming on. There was that Newcastle goal. He's had a few and not many. He's had, was he had five or six goals in maybe about 1,000 minutes or something?
Six. Yeah, I can. I'm even going to look it up because I think that's probably it's probably fairly interesting. Six goals, one assist in 12 matches. He has played 539 minutes. So that's all right.
That's a reasonable return, right?
Yeah, a goal a game. Yeah, it's okay. I mean, what was it, 15 last year? So that's, you know, one every two, and he's gone up to every game as a sub. That's you wouldn't be upset about that. That was pretty much how it ended, 3-0. I genuinely don't know if there's anything more to say. It's fairly clinical and just a done deal. What was kind of unusual was the Knicks being in a position where they wanted a photo taken with all the fans that had shown up and invited everyone down on the field. I don't know if you had seen that, H, but it was a novel experience and something that felt very in the moment, I guess. How did you find it, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good initiative. I like it. I think, you know, there's some ways it could be managed better, but I thought it was good.
I thought it was a good alternative to winning a title. Otherwise, if that wasn't there, you kind of, everyone would just be like, and then leave. They made something of the moment rather than, you know, can you imagine how chaotic it would have been if we'd won the title that night and they're lifting the trophy and everyone's on the field or something. But to have it as an alternative, I thought was a good idea, even if it wasn't intention to be like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't too bad. As Dave mentioned, there were a few choke points in getting everyone down on the field, so it did take a bit of time and effort. But, you know,
I think the goal of it's admirable, though. I think over, you know, the last few seasons, we've kind of lost that real interaction with players, you know, when there used to be the aftermatch with the players coming and, you know, walking through and going off to their dinner and whatever and doing the speeches and all that kind of stuff. You really had a tie to the players after a game. And we've kind of lost that a little bit over the last couple of seasons. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think it's always going to be a natural progression to being a bit more of a professional club. I mean, we were professional in those years, but we were different at the same time. But this felt like a real kind of flip back for one night to that, where you could, you know, go up and put a Teletubby mask on Alex Paulson, or, you know, have a yarn with Piney about whatever, or, you know, all that kind of stuff that you used to be able to do, kind of coming back a bit. And for a lot of people, they probably have never got to do that because they were never coming to the pub after the game. You know, the kids aren't doing that. That's not what they were doing. And some of those people will be new fans who never had that history to it. So, yeah, I think it was nice. I think the goal was good. But, yeah, I mean, the physical layout's a bit tough. And, you know, if you were doing it every week, you'd improve on some aspects of it. But I think it's really good. I think the club should get big raps for it.
And with that, the final game of the regular season came to an end for all but the Mariners and Adelaide. Obviously, that rescheduled game due to the storm in Dubai, meaning that the Mariners couldn't get back from Kyrgyzstan in time. That Adelaide game being postponed 2 weeks and is now on scheduled to be played on the Wednesday for us tomorrow, Wednesday night. I have heard that Aaron Kunda is available. Which is good because I would love to see him rip the Mariners and Ewan, and I think he's the one guy that could. That is at 9 p.m. local time, and we will all be watching that with bated breath.
Assuming things don't go to plan tomorrow, but I think one of my big what ifs is, what if the Mariners didn't get stuck in Kyrgyzstan? What happens if they had to come back and play that game 48 hours after coming back? What would that have meant for the season? I think that's a very tough ask.
Mm.
And to it flip, you know, gone from, oh, I think this is a, you know, this is a good, you know, good opportunity for Phoenix to versus now it's not so much of a burden for them. Kind of frustrating.
And also the extra pressure of having it all happening at once as well, maybe could have played into effect, because they would have been playing at this, their last game at the same time as us. And if we're going 2-3 nil ahead, maybe they would start to feel the pressure as well. Who knows? I mean, their coach may not even tell them. So that is now the waiting game. And so roughly 11 o'clock tomorrow night, we should have an answer as to whether the Knicks have finished first or second. Chiefy said that he's going around to one of the other coaches' places to drink a bottle of wine he got given by the other coach's mum, I think. And he's asked the players to please tuck themselves in bed and watch it later on, in case, you know, they've obviously got games to prepare for. There has been some other action, though. As Dave mentioned before, it's award season, and there have been some awards going around. The first one was the Women's Goal of the Year, which was Dale's favourite, the Macy Fraser free kick, because it was, Dale, I don't care what you say, it was a cracker.
Free kick goals.
The purest form of football, right?
Yeah, just hitting the ball. Is there anything more simple and pure than just hitting the ball? The opposition get to prepare all they like, and then you just hit the ball cleanly and say it didn't matter.
It's just magnificent.
I mean, if you want to take out, you know, 20 players on the pitch and make them irrelevant and just leave it for two of them, then sure, pure goal.
Pure goal. It was one person versus 11, Dale. It couldn't get more pure. You can't talk about Maradona and then not say that she didn't do exactly the same just with one hit. Didn't even use her arm. Yeah. Didn't even use his arm. The men's goal of the season was the Ben Old goal versus Adelaide. Again, I think, Dale, you mentioned before, it was a good goal. Not the thunder bastard that, you know, electrifies everything, but it was a well-taken goal. No, it wasn't a free kick. And he was a lot closer too, wasn't he?
Yeah, video not found, free kicks. My alternative to that, I think, is Pennington's goal against, I think, Western United, where he scored after, I think, we played like 5-1 pass touches from the back line. I think it went out wide to maybe Costa. He played a ball back to Old.
Was that his header where he comes sprinting through the middle?
Nah, it was like, it was a tap in, but it was like one pass out to someone on the right. It went to Costa, one pass. He put it back across to Old, I think, and then he cut it back to Pennington, who was free. Just a nice, well worked, smooth, cutting teams open goal. But like I say, I don't think there's any massive standouts. They're all very kind of in the same ballpark.
I'm really looking forward to when you're coaching your kids and there's just going to be a whiteboard with just arrows and circles and just going everywhere. These poor little 7-year-olds are just going to be running around in circles, just whacking into each other.
My kids don't care about football, unfortunately. So,
mine didn't until he was 7. So, you know, it could happen, mate. It could happen. Cross your fingers. We had the under 23 members player of the year and the members players of the year. We may as well round these into the two because it was the same player for both the men's and women's team. Women's winner was Macy Fraser, who was rewarded with a nice little bid from Utah Royals and is now, I assume she's winging away over there as we speak. And the men's player of the year was Alex Paulson. We'll start with Macy Fraser. H, was there any other option? It was.
And I want it known and said that I fully called against her. It's going to be.
Yeah, you played against her too. So you got
whipped by the Macy Shuffle many times, and I can't wait to see her do it in America. But yeah, she's the obvious choice.
It was Macy and then Daylight, wasn't it, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason her name featured so heavily and when we did our awards as well. Yeah, obvious winner.
Dale, Alex Paulson, you can proudly congratulate the Goalkeepers Union on this one. There was probably a couple of people in close proximity in my mind, but no one with a standout debut season like that in recent memory, was there?
No, there's certainly some other names you could throw around there. It's kind of a funny one, like going to a goalkeeper, it kind of feels like you are, like your team was under the pump for the whole season, but that certainly wasn't sort of the case. I mean, he certainly played his part, but yeah, I don't think that's not an egregious an award to give to him.
Dave, former fellow member of the Goalkeepers Union as well, was this as much about the way he contributed to the way we played the ball as his ability to 10 goals?
I mean, I think if I was to try and find a reason why he's picked it up over some of the other guys who would have been good shouts, I think it's just big moments. I think his big moments are more memorable, you know, penalty saves and just his passion, that's always on display. And I think when you're talking about the fact that this was members' votes, there are some big moments for him that really stick in the mind. And I think that probably is the key thing. And I think, you know, he's a fantastic media presence as well. You know, if you've seen interviews with him, he's just a lovely, lovely guy as well. And I think that kind of role model status as well is probably really good. If you're a parent and you were voting your kids' memberships or whatever, I think AP is just a great choice. And I think he is a guy that kids latch onto for those big moments and just his personality and all of that. So I think that's probably what sways it more than anything.
Yep, that's fair. I thought that it was unfortunate that he had such a good season because we had such a good crop of under 23s there. We sometimes forget Sam Sutton is still under 23. Finn Sermon as well. You know, it's I suspect Ben Old,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking a lot of guys who have really shown some ability this year, and it's just unfortunate you can only kind of give an award to one of them.
I think it says a lot that we're talking about, like, your under 23 player almost is kind of, you know, it's meant to be a youth player, it's meant to be people breaking through, but the names we're mentioning there are basically bolted on starters. They're some of the first names you put on the team sheet every week, and I think that speaks volumes to what Chiefy's done, that we're not talking about guys who historically some of these awards for the Phoenix and for other clubs around the league would be guys who are coming off the bench, getting some minutes here or there and, you know, maybe looking at a breakout season next season or whatever. Whereas for us, it's like, oh, which of these bolted on starters do we pick? Because they're all so young.
It does speak to the amount of talent that's coming through, that it's not just one that's even making that step up. It's multiple of them. And I'm struggling to think of someone who's a bit of a misfire in that time. I mean, we talk about OVH, but he's had very limited opportunities. So I don't think that that's quite the comparison. Whereas anyone that has had more significant opportunity has cracked on. Speaking of cracking on, I'll shut the hell up about that. The Wellington Phoenix Fan of the Year went to a very deserving Holly Eads. You may know Holly as part of the Little Corner of Yellow. Obviously, magnificent presence in that section. Loud voices amongst them all there, despite only being a few of them. One of the real difficulties of being based in another country, in fact another continent, is that away travel is so hard, but yet they represent pretty bloody hard. Dave, you probably come across them more often than the rest of us, I think.
I don't know about that, but Holly's well deserving. I mean, yeah, ever present this season, and I think, yeah, a pretty easy choice.
Host of a rival podcast too.
Ooh, no. Well, I don't care.
Congrats, Holly.
Yeah.
Holly's great.
Unfortunately, I don't know Holly, but I'm sure she is lovely. Everyone speaks very, very highly of her and obviously well-deserved. Further awards that went out were the Media Players of the Year. The Women's Media Player of the Year went to Mariana Speckmeyer. I'm not sure of the criteria for it, but certainly Spekmeyer had a good season, and she really kind of showed that she's, I think that we mentioned her a lot as one player that the club should really be chasing on signing. So not a surprise, Dale.
The fact that they've went for the two people who have golden boots. I don't know if that's a damning indictment on the national media that they've gone, yeah, let's just pick the golden boot winners.
Well, I mean, we also said that she deserved to be signed. Dale was given the secret away of who's gotten the men's one, Costa Barbarousis. H, no surprise there?
Yeah, and I think she said in her speech, hope I can score, come back next season and score more goals. So I hope we do re-sign her. I think her goal scoring was only one aspect of what she brought to the team. She did have that stamp of quality and a nice creative flair as well. So deserving, in my opinion.
My favourite thing about her was her absolute hustle. Like, even to the point of that ball went in the net, she was the first person to grab it and run back and go, let's get another.
I think it's interesting that maybe halfway through the season, we were umming and ahhing about whether she was a quality player or not, because she went through that phase of missing some absolute dollies, and we weren't quite sure whether that was like a phase, and perhaps we'll judge it by the end of the season. So I guess if you judge it by the end of the season, you say, well, certainly brought a very good contribution to the season.
Hmm. Yeah, signing her and Cox was another fairly significant coup for signing visa players for this women's team this season. Their combination too was fantastic. It's worth giving Cox a bit of a shout out. She was a fantastic player this year as well for the women's side. It almost feels wrong to be talking about the, you know, players of the year when we're just getting to the pointy end for the men. You know, there could be some names that, you know, people could really show themselves to be quality in the next game or two. The final award from this section is the Academy Players of the Year. I don't know that this is a tremendous surprise from the men's side. It was Lucas Kelly-Heald. I mean, a kid that was 18 years old at the beginning of the season, started in a position that he's not actually his normal position. It's a pretty amazing achievement, despite being surpassed by Sutton at the end of this. What do you guys reckon, as far as opportunities go that may be slightly limited, how far can he go?
Yeah, I mean, he showed it. He showed a hell of a lot, right? I think, as you say, he certainly wasn't at the same level as Sutton in that position, but he showed he has some real pedigree and some real talent there. And for a guy so young, he, despite a couple mistakes, showed a very kind of composed, complete footballer. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how we keep using him going forward, because he's clearly a talent and he's still young, and he obviously, yeah, could be developed outside his natural position, but I don't know. We'll see what happens. But yeah, I think it's great to see that we do, beyond those kind of young guys who are already bolted on starters, do have some more talent coming through behind. This isn't, you know, a golden generation or something. This is an academy producing fruit.
Yeah, I mean, I think he even got pulled up to the All Whites in this one of the squads at some stage, albeit no minutes, which is an amazing achievement for someone as young as he is. You do sometimes forget quite how young he is when he's scraping his head on the ceiling of the stadium at times. The women's player of the year went to Ella McMillan, another person. She got limited opportunities as the season grew on and the injuries got higher. Someone that really kind of stood up and showed a bit of calmness, I think. How did you gauge her season?
Great player, really high football IQ, high ceiling. Kind of reminds me of Anika Middendorf, who's someone that could have been probably have been one of New Zealand's greatest ever defenders, but was burnt out of the system. So she's exciting, and it'll be interesting to see kind of how that Phoenix squad develops and if she gets more of an opportunity going forward. Someone who is thinking even as far ahead as the Ferns is someone who should excite New Zealanders, because she's part of this newer generation that just has that football intelligence that's exciting to see.
Well said. So congratulations to all of those players. Well deserved. And even to those who who didn't get the ultimate gongs. There's a whole bunch of you that all played very, very well.
I think the awards night's still going, so there's probably a few more floating around. I'm guessing players' player of the year and coaches' player of the year, I'm assuming.
Yep, we may even throw those in should our inside source get them onto our list in time. Until then, we do have some Patreon questions. Thank you to those who volunteered those for us. Oh, this one's spicy. Who would we want to play from the Victory versus Sydney game and the Sydney versus MacArthur? Obviously, we don't know yet who's finishing first and second, so therefore we don't know who we're playing. Of those teams, who would we want to play? H, kick us off. Is this as simple as it's MacArthur, obviously?
It's not Sydney, because they're just the press. It's not Sydney. I think it possibly is. Victory, you just don't know what you're going to get. So it's MacArthur.
Yeah, I think out of the MacArthur-Sydney game, it's easy choice. It's MacArthur. I think you want to avoid Sydney like the plague. If you're talking the other game, I mean, it's a bit closer, but I think you choose Victory, which is a weird one, because traditionally you'd assume not Victory, but I think I would choose Victory, but that one's a real knife edge, because... yeah, either of those teams on a good day are going to be trouble, and both teams are having pretty bad days lately, so I don't know.
I want to stay away from Amy Park, so I'd absolutely take MacArthur. I reckon Sydney, I don't think we should fear them.
Ooh.
They've had like 3 clean sheets this whole season. Yeah, their defence is susceptible. I think we'd have a pretty good chance against them, but Amy Park is always a bit of a graveyard for us, so you know, we'll be back ourselves to get out there with a draw. Don't know.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, for mine, it's just MacArthur all day. Just, I don't, yeah. Sydney, they concern me. They're the sort of team that could nick one.
You know. There's another tie, people. I don't think you could only pick from one of the two ties. I agree. That tie, it's an easy choice. Commit to something from the other.
I don't Victory. I just can't.
Yeah. My head says Victory in that other one, but
any Melbourne game is cooked.
Yeah, I've been watching this league for too long to just be screaming, oh yeah, it's definitely Victory. I'm going to merge in these next two questions. The first one was, who from the season makes the all-time Phoenix best 11, and what's your Knicks Legends 11, and does Rufa make the cut? Dale?
I think if the criteria is players, the best season that they played at the club, I think Paulson is your goalkeeper. I don't think there's any, yeah, he doesn't have a huge amount of competition in the past. I think Payne's probably your right back. There's not that many other people.
There's none.
So there's at least two. I think Rufa sits alongside Riera, I think, as your holding midfielders. I think those are your three nailed on. I think Costa's probably unlucky to miss out. I think there's just too much competition in Burns, Eiffel, Krishna, even Brocky had a great season. Zawada had a great season last year. I think it's probably just a bit too much competition. I think those are your three. I think it's tough because arguably, say, our two centre-backs should be in there, but it's really hard to distinguish which was the better of the two. Like, they work as a unit, so would you put them in front of Taylor? Probably not. So there's probably an argument there, but it's hard for me to say that there was one of those two was better than the other and therefore should go alongside Taylor. I think that's probably a hard one.
Dave, Troy Harefield at right back.
I think if your criteria is a single, if your criteria is single season, I think you're probably pretty much bang on. But I think if we're talking, you know, the other part of the question is Knicks legends, right? So I think that's implying some longevity to the offering. I still think Tim Payne probably is in the discussion because, as you say, there just isn't a right back with the same kind of single season performance, but also with any sort of longevity. I mean, right backs for us, they've either been not right backs or haven't been around long because of injuries. But I think Rufa is probably the one who might still make the cut for longevity as well as a really good season. So I don't know. It's tough. But I don't think any of the others really have been around long enough. You know, guys like Paulson, I think he's, if he sticks with us a couple more years, I mean, he will be a bolted on Knicks Legends goalkeeper. But he's not there yet, but that's not through anything he's done wrong. He just hasn't been here that long. They're all still young, and I think potentially we're looking at a team of future legends, but I don't know that they're there yet.
H, who does the heart say that is in that team?
I'm going to say something so crazy right now. David Ball. Yes, goal drought.
I like it.
But, one, instrumental in turning both Ben Wayne and Ben Old into the players that they have become. You can see the influence of David Ball in both of their playing styles. Two, incredible workhorse. I have never in any other football team seen an attacker put in the defensive work that that man does. Three, ability to get a secondary assist off the charts. Four, long service for an import in particular. Five, commitment to just the Wellington vibe. Loves it. Family's happy here. Has an academy here now. Six, I think he's awesome. And people are going to get pissed off at me for saying this because he hasn't scored in so many games. But that is a stupid criterion to apply.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you. I'll go out and say you're right. But I think the only thing that hurts him in a Legends 11 there is competition for that sort of position.
I hear what you're saying, but I do think he's actually quite singular in just the way that he plays, a sort of false nine, sort of ranging winger, sort of utility position. You know, he's not like a Nathan Burns. He's not an out-and-out nine like an Eiffel. He's not a Costa Barbarouses. He is David Ball, and I just think that he is a legend.
I kind of like it. He's the most defensive attacking midfielder you'll ever see, and he allows the other players around him to commit forwards. The backwards six, if you like, Dale.
Oh, not the inverted six.
Oh, that was okay. Next two questions again are probably effectively the same question. Hand on your heart, predictions for tomorrow's game, and is this our year? Dave, I'm going to throw it to you first.
Mariners win the title.
The premiership. Tomorrow.
Yeah. It's football. The league title's the title. Anything else is just Australian or American tacked on final series. Obviously, I still would love to come away with some silverware, but a football league title is the title.
I'm standing and applauding because I am so with you there, brother.
But I don't know how the final series is going to go, but I think tomorrow, Mariners win.
H, head or heart?
I'm going to be crazy. You know, like as much as I would love the Phoenix to win, the Mariners are probably going to win and they will deserve to win it. Like there is a part of my footballer heart that says they've played well enough to deserve it. But God, can you imagine?
Yeah, I feel the same. If it wasn't the Mariners, I'd probably be a lot more upset about it. But they have played solid football, and they're not an unlikable team.
Let's bring it to the league, you know, the sauce bottles and the team they tried to get rid of 25 million times. I like it.
Dale, is there anything in there that your heart just creeps above everything else?
Oh, I mean, odds are it's going to be Central Coast. I think LA's defense is too shit for Central Coast not to score a couple. I will say at the knockout finals series, I had a quick look yesterday, and we've scored the most points against the top six teams than anyone else in the top six. We've had 21 points in 14 games, Central Coast 19, Victory 17. So we have performed the best against the teams that are left to go.
Yep, that is fair. Here's a topical one. We have seen the Auckland reach out to Paddy Gower and spell his name wrong, which is always a good start. And Paddy has replied, Phoenix till I die. Is that our proudest celebrity moment, or is there another one that trumps that?
It's pretty damn funny, that's for sure.
Oh, God love Paddy.
No, I mean, in that instance, yes. In general, I can take him and leave him.
Oh, that's enough for me. I don't care about anything else he does.
Thanks for your general journalism comments, Dale.
I think we've heard H's opinion. Poor old Paddy. So, this is a nice one. There has been an announcement about VAR in that we will actually be hearing the explanations of why VAR has ruled a particular way. We have a legal expert with us, fortunately. H, how fraught with peril is this, and why haven't they been doing it in the first place?
In general, giving the reason for a decision tends to help people legitimize the decision. However, it's going to add more time, probably might invite more criticism. At the World Cup, the Women's World Cup was pretty funny. Like, the big box in the air, decision is penalty. But I think all in all, it's probably the sort of thing that should have been built into VAR from the beginning. It's been too hidden from the fans. There's been too much conspiracy. But, like, I think at this point, it's just going to add time and you'll be better off just actually getting rid of VAR, like Sweden has done.
It doesn't solve anything. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing, as you say. If this was baked in right from the start, I don't know why it's not. They should announce what their decision is. There's a lot of people who have no idea what the hand signals and all of that nonsense mean. So saying it out loud is not a problem. But none of this fixes the problems with VAR. It just doesn't. The problems with VAR are inconsistent decisions, over refereeing, you know, all the stuff we talk about all the time, every time there's a controversial decision. And I don't think this does anything to solve that, because the reality is when you watch the TV later or whatever, which we always do, we still don't gain clarity on the decision that was made in some of these cases where it's like, how was that not a red card? You know, it was studs into his face, and somehow we found a, you know, a little slip, or, you know, oh, but the contact point on the ball was, you know, or 1 centimeter offside or whatever. None of it makes any of that okay, seeing it on a TV replay later. So having them say first contact was on the ball, no red card at the game, isn't going to make people more okay with it. It's not going to change the same controversy and the same anything about it, in my opinion. All it's going to do is mean that people who don't know the laws of the game and don't understand the hand signals understand that it was an offside, not a foul. You know, like that's all it changes.
Yeah, it's never going to change. It's attacking the wrong issue. It's thinking that people's main issue with VAR is the decisions that are made itself, which sometimes is the issue. But like the more pervasive problem with VAR is, to use a law term, jurisdictional. It's when it engages. Sometimes it won't engage in a situation that previously it's completely hammered a referee for. It's this idea of going back on everything with a fine-tooth comb. It cannot rectify that issue. That's systemic for VAR. And they're just never going to sell football fans, people who love football because it's flowing. They're never going to sell them on VAR. It's just incompatible with the game.
My take on it is, if you have to tell people it's something, then it probably isn't in the first place. And I am looking forward to the first time a VAR comes on and says, it's the vibes, Your Honor, it's the vibes.
I think this is going to be far more easily solved with some kind of coordination between the VAR booth and the stadium screen, that they can put up like VAR pending potential offside or potential handball or potential whatever, so that when the game is delayed and people aren't going, someone making a sub. But I think ultimately on the broadcast, I don't see why, and maybe it's to cause controversy, why broadcasters don't employ a former referee as some kind of expert comms person that they can tap into on the touchline to say, why was that called that? And they go, well, actually, to law, blah, 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 because so many broadcasters don't know shit about the laws of the game, about intention and whatever, that having someone who can explain it to them, hopefully without making them look like an idiot, would be quite helpful.
Oh, I could do with that in my life. We have run a bit over time with all these really good questions and the awards. We've just seen two more sets of awards come in, and we'll get to those just before we wrap it up. The Players Player of the Year, the aforementioned Alex Paulson, no surprise there, and a very well-deserving Mackenzie Barry for the women's side. We haven't probably given her the credit she deserves up to this point, but she certainly had a stellar season. Women's Player of the Year, it was also named as Mackenzie Barry, and the Men's Player, your Phoenix Men's Player of the Year award went to Costa Barbarousis. Deserving nominations, even if it wouldn't be our first pick, peeps?
Yeah, I think on the men's side, you could make an argument for four or five different people. And I think that's kind of summarised our season has been much more about a collective performing at their best rather than someone dragging us through. Like, I think Alex Rufer should have won something in there. I think he's been exceptional this season, and we certainly noticed when he hasn't been there. But, you know, it's hard to look against, was it 13 goals? Yeah, McKenzie easily worthy of her awards, I think.
Yep. Very well said, Dale. I think that's probably the best place we can wrap it up. Thanks all for listening for the season. Obviously, there's still games to come, and we will be potting about those after they happen with all the tears of joy and tribulation that come along. That next game that matters to us is obviously the Mariners versus Adelaide tomorrow at 9 p.m. Then after that, we have the two finals games coming up on, he says, the 18th is the one in Wellington. When's the one before that, gents?
They haven't. It's going to wait until they know who the opposition will be.
Right, they haven't even decided today. Okay, well, that is fine. I'm glad I didn't actually miss that. Thanks all for listening. We'll talk soon. We'll be getting that pod out, obviously, once that next game is decided and played.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Phoenix City.